The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio.
Coming up on the program today, we're going to discuss early season frost-tolerant plants as well as seed-starting basics. Our guest is author Sally Jean Cunningham, and we'll answer your garden questions. The hour is full, so join us.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
And welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy that you're taking time out of your day to join us on the program, whether you're listening to us on one of the 18 AM and FM frequencies broadcasting our program here in 2024 through a radio app, through our parent website, which is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Underneath the Season 8 tab at the top of the page, in-studio video replay, podcast replay, however you're doing such, thank you very much. This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. Want to be part of the program? You can do such at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call anytime at toll-free coast-to-coast at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. I'm your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
We appreciate you tuning in. We're going to get in the program here, but first, it's time for the joke of the week. Holly, what do flowers wear underneath their petals?
Stems?
They're underplants.
I like it.
And this week's garden joke is brought to you by Rescue.com.
This week is brought to you by Rescue.com. American-made rescue products keep your family home and yard protected from pest insects like wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, fire ants, and more. Find out at Rescue.com. That's R-E-S-C-U-E.com.
Early season frost-tolerant plants, Holly. Frost-tolerant is a... what does that mean?
It basically means that it's the crop's ability to survive a frost or below freezing temperatures. So it doesn't mean that if a hard freeze comes in.
18, 12 degrees.
Yeah. So it's like 18, 12 degrees. It's something, you know, like around 30, 36.
Right. When the air cools below the dew point, now that's a whole other thing, but dew points can be formed on the surface if temperatures are also below 36, the result can be frost, which is frozen ice crystals. The general rule of thumb is most plants freeze when temperatures hit or remain at 28 degrees for 5 hours. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule. Seedlings that are more tender will freeze at 32 and even 33. In tropicals, that's a whole nother batch of stuff, but other plants are just hardy by nature and can withstand temperatures as low as 18 to 20 degrees, and if not lower.
That's impressive.
Yes. And it all depends on your location and not just the city that you're in. If they're calling for frost tonight, that doesn't necessarily mean that your garden's going to get hit. If you follow our video series on our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. We garden predominantly in Holly's mother's backyard. And it sets in a unique environmental condition, I guess, because we can have frost. Neighbors can have frost, both sides, front and back, and that garden doesn't get touched. Just by the uniqueness of the way it sets in the city, it is, it's got a unique, what do they call that?
Ecosystem.
Ecosystem, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So we're going to talk about these frost-tolerant vegetables. And so the first one is broccoli, and I'm going to kind of group cauliflower in with the broccoli as well, or we can talk about them separately, but broccoli, once you have it established, you can start it from seed, and you can get that outside and be frost tolerant.
Right. Now, again, with if you've got seedlings inside, and it these are, you know, you can plant, start them X amount of weeks before your last average frost date, and you can put them out a couple of weeks before your last average frost date, which means the nights are going to be chilly, and there's going to be potential frost. Frost doesn't mean freeze. These plants, you still have to harden them off. You're bringing them out from, let's say, 72 degrees in your home, in your grow room, under the grow lights, from the windowsill, and you're taking them outside to where it's 40 degrees on a good day and 35 or 4 on a good night. You have to harden them off. That's a process of acclimating the plants to the environment in which they are going to be living in or planted in for the duration of their lifespan. So you can do this over the course of several days, gently taking them out of the environment in which they're in, in your home, setting them in a shaded area on the porch, and then gradually working them out into full sun and overnight. Onions, leeks, brassicas, all of these cool weather crops still have to be hardened off if you are starting them indoors and putting them outside.
Right. So you can't just take your plants and go from outside, for inside to outside.
They will die.
They will. You have to give them support, acclimation.
Essentially, it's like having a, and this is a terrible example, but it points to how significant it is. A newborn baby throwing in a pond of ice water. It's not going to survive. I know that's a horrible example, but that's what's happening to these plants. You're taking them from 72 and putting them outside into a frigid temperature without getting them acclimated. And I don't think a baby could get acclimated to a pond of ice water, but I think you understand where I'm going with this example.
Right, right. Exactly. It's a shock.
Yes.
Yes. So we're going to talk about the Brussels sprouts. They're fun to grow. A lot of people don't realize that they're kind of a long season vegetable. Some people will start them or put them, not start them, but put them outside in spring. And then they're like, okay, it's midsummer. Why aren't these doing anything? And it takes the whole full
120 to 150 days on most Brussels sprout varieties.
Yeah.
And once they get to a mature state, they can sit in the garden in some environments through December, early January, and you can harvest them as you need them. Other environments where it turns off 0 degrees for weeks on end, you got to get them out of the garden prior to that.
Absolutely. And so there's a whole process of Brussels sprouts. You do this where you cut the top off.
Growth tip.
But homegrown Brussels sprouts are absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Chives will come back year after year. You can divide the clump if you want to, so you don't have to start them each year, but you can divide them and move them throughout the garden area and utilize those on a regular basis. Kale can be quite hardy down to, in a mature state, it can get down to 18, 20 degrees without any problem. Peas are the same way. However, again, we want to be very cautious of when we are either starting the seeds outside or transplanting them when we have that very tender time of that freeze frost area where it can go up and down and potentially damage the plants. Now, if you are planting, let's go with peas here. If you're planting peas outside, they can withstand a little more coldness than if you was to start peas indoors, harden them off and take them outside. Don't start peas indoors. People do it. It's a big hassle. Just pre-soak your peas for about 12 hours. Plant them outside according to your environmental conditions. But again, growing from seed to a seedling outside, the plants are much more tolerable of the cold temperatures than a seedling in which you started indoors, hardened off, and then took outside.
Yeah. Exactly. So then we have kale. Kale is something that it's frost tolerant in the spring, and then it's even almost freeze tolerant. Tolerant in the fall. So it can survive a freeze, and then even then it gets tastier.
Radishes are almost more enjoyable. They like to grow when the ground is a little chilly because as the heat and the day length gets longer and warmer, they tend to bolt, like many of these cool weather crops will do, due to the day length, not so much the heat temperature, because these are light sensitive as well as cool sensitive plants. So you can get those in the ground. Or if you're like us, we've had radishes voluntarily be planted for almost a decade now in our front yard garden because we had a whole bunch of them. They went to seed, and now they've just continued to come year after year. And then we don't always harvest all of them, and they go to seed, and they just kind of replant themselves. So we get a free planting and harvest of them early on in the spring. But, yeah, they like that cool weather. Spinach is the same thing. But spinach is cool-tolerant to a degree, and then it will go to bolt. Substitute, if you like spinach, plant Swiss chard. And that is a great substitute in which you can utilize all season long. It is not conducive to just cool weather temperatures. You can plant in the cool weather and grow it all the way to frost. But a hard freeze, it will wilt and it will be inedible.
I don't know if I would say Swiss chard is necessarily like a one-to-one replacement to spinach. But it has that like leafy green.
What you can do with spinach, you can do with Swiss chard.
Yeah. I prefer Swiss chard over spinach personally.
Okay.
Just for kind of digestive reasons and whatnot.
If you have tummy issues, you might want to be aware of what you're, don't go eating a whole bowl of it if you're not sure how these things will react your system.
All of our bodies kind of connect differently with leafy greens. So speaking of food-related topics.
Yes.
We are brought to you today by our sponsor, Walton's Inc. Listen, we know you care about where your food comes from, canning, preserving, that's all great. But what about the meat? At Walton's, you can get the...
Everything
you need.
Except for the meat.
Except for the meat, you can get the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat products your way to your high standards. They have a community out there called meatgistics.com, and it's over 15,000 users that use this community to help you get snack sticks that are delicious, ask questions, what have you, meat processing, all the good stuff. And Walton's has everything from meat grinders, mixers, sausage stuffers, and more to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's, everything but the meat
you can use. They also have seasonings if you don't do the butcher stuff. So
delicious seasoning.
Just a reminder there. I know you said it, but I'll say it again. And they have a coupon code.
You use code GROW50, so it's GROW50 to save 10% off your order of $50 or more. That's waltonsinc.com.
We talked about seedlings and frost-tolerant seedlings and plants. When we come back, we're going to talk about basics of seed starting. If you've never done it or you're maybe new or want a refresher, we're going to offer that to you. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Are you bugged by bugs? You need Naturally Green products, no more bugs. Environmentally friendly, made in the USA, No More Bugs is a cedar blend that repels and eliminates mosquitoes, no-see-ums, ticks, fleas, roaches, ants, and more. No More Bugs is safe for you, your pets, and plants. Available online at nomorebugs.net, Amazon, Walmart.com, and the Home Shopping Network. Make watering easy. DripWorks provides quality drip irrigation supplies and equipment to gardeners just like you for all your growing needs across the U.S. and Canada. Purchase online at DripWorks.com. Jung Seed Company is a family-owned and operated seed company since 1907 with the largest selection of seeds and plants online. Use coupon code 10TG24 to save 10% off your order at JungSeed.com. The coupon code is 10TG24 at JungSeed.com for 10% off. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online. Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit ProPlugger.com.
If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a clear non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear, penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying on Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts. Internal wood stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatingsUSA.com. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy that you are with us today, listening to us from on your radio, podcast replay, in-studio video replay, radio app, however you're doing it. Thank you for being with us. Honey Bee Healthy, Holly?
Since 2000, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has helped beekeepers maintain healthy and thriving hives. Attracting pollinators to your garden this year is as simple as hanging a hummingbird feeder with a mixture of sugar water and Honey Bee Healthy Original. Don't be alarmed to see birds, bees, and butterflies dining together at the feeder. Pollinators coexist peacefully. Honey Bee Healthy Inc. is offering a 10% discount on an 8-ounce bottle of Honey Bee Healthy Original to this show's listeners. Enter discount code BEEGARDEN, that's BEEGARDEN, at checkout. For more information, everything, go to honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com.
Throughout the program, you're going to hear coupon codes such as that and Walton's and many others. If you're not able to capture those or write them down or remember them, we have an easy way for you to get a hold of them. You go to our parent website, which is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the money tab at the top of the page, and they are all listed for you, and you just have to insert the coupon code at the time of purchase. Well, seed starting basics. Now, some people, Holly, never start a seed. They just go to their garden center, independent garden center, and buy their starts each spring. Nothing wrong with that. However, now, there's a however with this. Each year now, if you have kept any sort of memory records, of each time you go there each spring, the plants are getting more and more and more expensive. So by starting at least some percentile of seeds or plants inside or prior to planting them outside, not buying starts, you can save quite a bit of money. You can go to Jung Seed and use coupon code 10TG24, save 10% on your order, and get 25 tomato seedlings, for example, for $2 or $2.50, I forget what it is now, instead of buying one tomato plant for like $6. And not all seeds you have to start inside. Tell your story.
So, tell my story.
Yes.
So, growing and Joey has now experienced this. Growing up, we did not start seeds. I didn't know seed starts were a thing. So, we would just, in Wisconsin here, that's where we're out of, we would plant the seeds Memorial Day weekend. That was our time.
That's the target date for most times,
yeah.
But I think it's changing now in a lot of areas.
Right. So, and we wouldn't... We wouldn't start seedlings inside or anything like that. We would just put them outside.
Peppers, eggplants, tomatoes, every single thing.
Every single thing. I don't know. I don't remember if we started peas earlier. Probably not, though. So, So we would just do that, and then we would have nice tomatoes and zucchini and peppers and all the things.
Now, again, because of what the advantage is to starting a seed or a plant start inside or buying it is you're getting a healthy plant start already. When you see on the package days to maturity, it's not, okay, I planted it inside, now I start the days, it says 87 days to get a tomato. That's not how that works. It's unique math. If it's from the time you take the seedling and put it in the ground outside. So if you start your seed, like a tomato, like you did, and it takes 87 days, you put it in the ground and your clock starts at 87 days. When we start seeds inside, we get a nice tomato start, but the clock doesn't start until we take that seedling and plant in the ground. Then that 87 days, even though it may be in the root maker grow trays for 8 weeks, 4 to 8 weeks, so whatever that's, 24 to 56 days, that doesn't count towards the days to the time it's ready to harvest.
Right. So we did this. We did this past summer.
Yes.
With tomatoes, and how'd that go for us?
It went well. We didn't weed very well, so that was a strike against us. But the tomatoes equaled out from the ones we had started indoors. We planted them, and then we planted another row right beside them of just straight seeds out of the package. And by the end of the season, they were the same size and producing the same amount of fruit. So this year, We will not start tomato seeds indoors. We will and have started peppers. We will start eggplants. We've started celery. We'll start onions and leeks.
Onions, leeks, yeah.
Those, but tomatoes we will not. Peppers are a very slow growing plant. We'll also do Brussels sprouts because it takes a long time to get those going. But tomatoes, we will not waste our time starting them inside, maximizing our space indoors to grow the plants in which we know will need a little help of a jump start. So when to plant your seeds indoors is all determined on your last average frost date by the USDA growing hardiness zone. That's just a guideline, average of the last 10 years. They've changed a lot of that this past year. And it's 8 weeks before or 12 weeks before your last average frost date. That just gives you a guideline in which to start the seeds. That doesn't mean if tomorrow is your last average frost date, you can put your plants in the ground tomorrow afternoon or the next day. It's all based on root zone temperature and long-range forecast. What to plant in and fertilizer or not.
Right, so you can use a seed starting mix. You can use just a nice compost.
Usually the store generic brand.
Yeah.
That if it's a slow-release fertilizer, it's mixed
in. But when
in.
We say store generic brand, we mean from a garden center.
Garden center, not
yeah,
from
not
a drugstore. Right.
So, yeah. So, but if you, a lot of times you'll see these little, like, they're called peat pots, and they're the expandable ones. People will get those, especially when they're newer to seed starting because they're convenient.
Yeah.
They're cute, whatever. There's, like, a little tray you can get with them. But those don't have any sort of fertilizers. Don't have any, like, plant food.
That's
or
just
anything.
Compressed cocoa core.
So you want to, then you would have to fertilize, feed them after a couple of weeks.
And that's what people find that they plant, and what everything's going good, and now it's they don't look good because the seed has utilized all the energy that has stored up, nature has stored up in the seed coat to get that plant up and going, and then now you're needing to require to supplement, feed that plant if you're not in a all-purpose, slow-release fertilizer potting mix that you get for half the price at your independent garden center because it is the store brand and not a name brand.
Right. So, yeah. So you want to keep that in mind that whatever you're starting them in, that they have some sort of food. As far as if you have a nice potting soil mix or compost, you don't have to fertilize that.
No. We've grown straight compost before.
Yeah.
Out of the compost bin on the porch. Yeah.
Before putting them into the ground, they'll have enough food in them getting from starting the seed until you get them outside.
Should you transplant these things or leave them where they...
You can. You can transplant some of them. You can if you have some older seeds like we have, sometimes we'll do like this over planting. And then once the ones that we know are going to be viable come up, we do transplant them.
We start them in a party cup and plant, let's say, for the peppers, 20 or 30 peppers in a red solo cup. And then we will sort them out and put them, the healthiest ones, in a root maker grow tray, and then that will be where they will stay until we take them out, harden them off, and put them in the ground. So you could start them in the tray right away if the space is allowed, and if you have the space, if you have a greenhouse, climatized, all that stuff. But most of us don't have that space, and space is a premium, so that's why we do the cups first, find the best ones, and then move them up to a seed starting tray.
So where to plant? So this is something that you would have to determine based on things like how warm of an area you have in your home. If it is something where it's a cooler area and you can give a little heat, you can plant there. But you want to make sure you have sunlight, and you also want to make sure that you're keeping these things away from any children that might mess with them or pets or whoever
else. Well, sunlight or a really good grow light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm saying that if you're not utilizing a grow light,
right,
you want to keep that in mind that you have to have sunlight. And so it's like a south-facing window is good. We used a west-facing window without a grow light for a long time.
Rotated the plants every night.
Rotated the plants, yep.
Also, whenever you go outside and plant them, Holly, you want to look up.
Yeah,
because just because there's no leaves now, it can be pretty shady in the summer.
This is something you probably should have done in the fall or late summer to look to see if you, especially if you're new to this, but that's okay. You can usually kind of guess where overhanging trees or buildings or whatever it might be. So a heat mat.
Yeah, biggest question here.
Some people, you know, I don't know if this is like being said on garden blogs or whatever, but some people think that you need a heat mat to start your peppers. And that's not true. If you have a room temperature home, you know, 68, 70 degrees or warmer, you're fine. You don't need a heat mat. Now, if you have a basement that's chilly or an attic or a breezeway or something, then you might want to get a heat mat for peppers. Peppers do like that warmth when they're germinating. However, don't use, like, don't go to your, you know, pantry or whatever, coat closet, and get your heating pad, like your drugstore heating pad. You want to use like an actual horticultural heat mat because it's going to allow for temperatures. It's not going to automatically shut off, things like that.
And if you get a little water on it, it's not potentially going to zap you.
Right. I don't know if like the newer heat mat, the heating pads from the drugstore are a zap chance.
Well, I'm sure if you got them wet, that's not going to be healthy or safe. A horticultural grade mat is designed to kind of, if it gets moisture on it, it's not going to, you know, potential. As we talked earlier at the beginning of this segment, if you can plant directly in the ground, that is going to be your best bet for convenience as well as cost savings because you're not buying starts. But absolutely, there is nothing wrong with buying plant starts. We will buy plant starts this year. We've bought plant starts. And even when we've tried to start 80 to 90% of our plants to plant them outside, we have bought plant starts. So there's not a knock to you if you are only a plant start buyer.
Right. Yeah, there's no problem with that. And there's been times where, like Joy has mentioned, we've bought plant starts just because
it's a good backup.
It's a good backup. It's a good backup plan. Sometimes we go to the garden center, and this probably happens to a lot of people. We're looking at one thing. Oh, we wander over to the veggie plant starts. Well, we don't have this tomato, or we don't have this pepper, or we have some room for this.
Or we have a gift card from there, so we just go ahead and utilize it and buy plant starts.
That too. Yeah, you have a gift card, or you have points, or whatever else. So definitely, there's no shame in buying the plant starts.
Well, soon it will be warming up, Holly, and you will want to make sure you can enjoy your yard without those pesky beetles and grubs. You don't want to share your yard with them.
Yeah, there's always talk in the news about Japanese beetles. People are always, you know, they're taking over. It's getting worse, whatever. Your neighbor, the Japanese beetles, whatever. So with spring just around the corner.
Is that what the neighbor sounds like?
Yes.
People's going, that's what Fred sounds like.
Yeah, see? With spring just around the corner, it's time to start thinking about controlling beetles and grubs in your garden or your yard.
GrubGon can be applied to your turf or garden or around ornamentals to control the grubs and lessen the impact that those beetles have on your yard this summer. Easy to use and apply with a commercial spreader or irrigate it right into your soil. Biological that is specifically targeted for grubs and beetle invaders without harming beneficial bees such as ladybugs and butterflies.
And to be honest, it's the only non-chemical that works. Find out more at phylumbioproducts.com. That's PHYLLOM bioproducts.com.
Hang out with us when we come back. Author Sally Jean Cunningham will be with us talking about companion planting. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Happy 65th anniversary to David J. Frank, Southeastern Wisconsin's leading landscape company. Their award-winning services include everything from lawn care, landscape maintenance, design, construction, renovation, irrigation, sustainability, and more. Big or small, let the experts at David J. Frank handle the hard work for you. Find out more at davidjfrank.com. Garden like a pro in 3 easy steps and receive customized fertilizer recommendations for your garden or lawn. Soil Savvy helps you determine what nutrients your plants need to thrive. Never again overapply nutrients they don't need. A patented process that makes you a smart gardener. To get your soil test kit, go to mysoilsavvy.com. The guesswork out of composting with the Aerobin 400 or smaller 200 for easy composting. The Aerobin mimics how nature decomposes waste. The Aerobin is easy to use. You prepare your balanced organic waste. Just open it up, drop it in, and close. After a short time, fertile compost is produced, which is easily accessed via the lower side door. The thermal insulation in the Aerobin conserves heat, leading to rapid breakdown of the biomass and works efficiently year-round, even in cooler regions. There is no need to turn the biomass, and it is pet and rodent resistant. It has little odor and can kill annoying weeds and seeds. It is BPA-free. The Aerobin 400 or 200 comes with a reservoir at the bottom to collect the leachate. When diluted, makes for great compost tea liquid fertilizer. Aerobin composts kitchen and garden waste quickly. Easy to assemble with no special tools needed. The Aerobin makes composting rewarding and easy. Go to burpee.com or homedepot.com. Deer Defeat is an all-natural based animal repellent to keep deer and rabbits away from your valuable plants that is odorless after 30 minutes and dries clear. It creates a continuous, invisible shield to protect your plants. Works for 30 days through rain, snow, and freeze. Will not clog your sprayer. Apply to your property without environmental damage. You can spray directly onto your plants up to flowering, then apply around your plants to continue protection. No need to reapply. Money back guarantee. To purchase, go to deerdefeat.com and use coupon code RADIO to save 10% off your order. Mantis tillers, the premium long-lasting gas-powered tillers, are the perfect solution for any garden. This Mantis machine is available with 2 or 4 cycle engines with a 19-inch or 16-inch tilling width. Your DIY companion in your garden and your lawn converts easily for edging, aerating, and more with optional attachments. Find details at mantis.com. Wind River Chimes will always be the inspiring harmony. With a large selection of customization options, you will find the sound that soothes you. Visit windriverchimes.com to shop and find out more.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy that you're with us today. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Sally Jean Cunningham is an author, writer, master gardener, and leads garden tours nationwide. She has an informative book, The Great Garden Companions, a companion planting system for beautiful, chemical-free vegetable gardens. Welcome to the program, Sally.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, I will start with this. I think many people have a misconception about what companion planting is. So what is companion planting to clear all this misinformation up here?
Well, yes, because there's been about 25 years of confusion and misinterpretation on this. And I wrote this book originally because I was a little ticked off at some of the silliness. I was science-oriented, working with Cornell University, and I had learned a lot that there's reasons that some plants go better together than others, but they would all say, oh, the marigolds. You put them around the garden and they chase away all the other bugs. Well, no, possibly marigolds and some other insects may confuse some pest insects coming in. But companion gardening really is about putting plants together that serve each other's needs in both practical ways, and they attract beneficial insects that help to support a healthy garden. The short way to say this, it's about biodiversity. A biodiverse garden full of flowers, herbs, and vegetables together, somewhat mimicking nature's strengths.
Right. And we see all of these goofy charts online. 27 chart says this, 4 says the opposite. And if you plant this next to that, it will make that sweeter. That's not how that works.
No, it really isn't. I remember my original research finding out what you were saying, that this one said, oh, this likes that and this likes this. Well, that's all kind of cute and fuzzy, but I was putting 3x5 cards all over a huge table saying, oh, greens go with onions, but they can't go with them. So what you just said is the case. So what I did was break it down into first the practical where, okay, some plants prefer shade, so you put lettuces and spinach in the shade of climbing beans, or in the earlier season, climbing peas. So there's a practical companion arrangement. And sometimes they're companions because they do repel critters. If you put alliums, lots of the onion plants around certain things, they do scare off, hey, animals as well as some of the other flying insects that just don't discover their beans. So there's a number of reasons, but honestly, when I finally learned more and more and more, and I did this through Rodale Institute and I went to Cornell courses, but at that time they were very chemical oriented still, but organic was taking over. Into the 90s, finally, people were caring more and were sort of reverting back to the 70s original organic movement. But we were finally finding out that really the best companion plants are the ones that bring in beneficial insects. If you just invite certain things, if you put dill around the broccoli or dill around the Brussels sprouts, well, the dill attracts parasitoid wasps that actually lay eggs on cabbage beetles and do certain things that cause the bad guys to die, or the next generation of them to die. So really, if you bring in good flowers and herbs, you are attracting a whole population you can maintain of good workers for you. It's putting Mother Nature to work. And especially if you care to do organic, you're not going to go do a quick fix pesticide to get rid of something. You want to set up a system that is self-sustaining. Do I make sense?
Absolutely. That really does make a lot of sense. And if someone is new to companion planting, you know, aside from your book, what are some other resources, especially local, to them to get started?
Well, I think that these days the cooperative extensions in most states and the master gardeners who've been trained, and I suspect that there are organic gardening communities everywhere that really discover some of this, sometimes the hard way and sometimes by doing their own research or finding books and writings like mine. But I think there's hope, and I would go to a master gardener, and I would also experiment. Do raised beds and try some combinations and see what is the result. And don't be quick to kill something that looks like a pest. Get insect books and little tiny magnifying glasses and start looking at what they really are and what they really are doing. It's quite magical. And the more you start to pay attention to the insect world in there, it's like bird watching. You get to name your insects and make lists and understand, because 95% of the insects in a vegetable garden or a flower garden are good guys doing something very useful, and our entomophobic culture just wants to kill everything as soon as it's creeping or crawling. And once the more you know, the less you're willing to kill things, and you want to trust that there's something interesting going on. So it's a different angle on the garden.
Well, let's talk about your book, Great Garden Companions. Tell us a little bit that's something of interest inside the book that would inspire our listeners to pick up a copy.
Well, yes, it's fun for me after really many years to find that people will come to me with a muddy copy of the book and said, would you sign it again? I take it out there all the time. Or they want one for their daughters. And by the way, just an aside, my book was just translated into the Korean language and is selling in Korea because they're having an organic gardening movement. It's the kind of thing that's like a dream for an author. So that was exciting. But I think a practical thing then that readers might get out of it is that it's hard to set up your rotation of your garden every year. What should go with what? You have 10 by 20 feet or 20 by 40 feet, and where are you going to place everything each year? Well, what I found out of a lot of practical experimentation is that certain things go well together, and it makes kind of like a little neighborhood. You have friends and family and invited in insects, and those things work together. And in a larger garden, you just rotate that family for planting in the next patch next year. So you sort of rotate the neighborhoods, and it takes the craziness of planning it all away. I made a fairly easy rotational system. Of course, you don't rotate strawberries and asparagus, but most things you do want to change them around because they're using the soil differently.
Fantastic. So just to kind of switch gears here, you have a passion for leading garden tours. Where did that come from? How did you get into leading garden tours?
Well, in my case, I was sort of becoming famous on TV as the garden lady because I was the cooperative extension person who got up there with the news every Sunday morning and answered questions. And I ended up doing that for a couple of decades and created somewhat local fame in Western New York State and Pennsylvania to the point that AAA said, "Oh, we hear this garden travel stuff is getting hot. Do you think you could take people to some gardens here and there?" "Oh, of course I would love to." So I developed that as a as another job. You don't get rich writing garden books, but I did develop my travel tour leader job, and it suits my personality, and I take people to the Chelsea Flower Show in London or this coming week, the Philadelphia Flower Show. Twice in a row, I go back and forth with motor coaches and filled up buses. And it's a wonderful, but we also do it locally because Buffalo, who would think, has the largest garden tour in the country. It's just like an oxymoron. Gardening in Buffalo? They think we're nothing but snow and chicken wings, and the Buffalo Bill's not quite making it. but the tourism thing is here to stay, and gardening improves cities. It builds neighborhood pride. There's so much positive to this gardening world in urban settings. So it's really made a huge difference in Buffalo, and I'll take people out from this area, but also hope to bring them into the Buffalo region. And they're quite surprised at the end of July to find this weekend with 400 gardens open to the public for free. And it's a really cool thing.
Well, you may not get rich writing garden books, but you're having the time of your life and you're doing what you love.
Yes, and it's really important to me to help people do things organically. Let's be kind to Mother Nature because there's a lot of problems out there. So we do what we can, and in a home garden, there's absolutely no need to go spraying and killing things. It isn't the end of the world if your pepper has a spot on it, but it does matter what we're breathing and what we're leaving here for the birds and the insects and so forth. So I appreciate that most of your listeners, I think, probably think like this.
Well, and there's a certain level of new beginner that that's all they've been conditioned. If it's bad, spray it. And we as educators have to change that mindset. It's not that they're dumb because they just don't know.
That's right. Absolutely. You take people where they're starting from, and there's a lot of big businesses that are telling people in April, you got to start spraying your lawn. Well, why are you doing this? So I think it's a learning process, and I also think that we need compassion for the little critters. And if a kid can just go, whack, I killed it. Well, what did you kill? What was it doing?
Right.
What was the purpose of that? We need empathy for the creatures out there. It's quite a process, and I think gardening is about systems, not just cause and effect, and you just go kill something. It's not quite the approach. I just did a huge home show where I gave a talk, and one of my most, I was appreciated, I think, for the line that garden maintenance isn't about killing things. And I got warm response from that one. So it's one little message at a time.
Absolutely true. So, you know, I enjoy going to botanical gardens myself. If somebody was looking, you know, for a specific garden tour, aside from perhaps what the botanical garden is providing, how would you find garden tours or maybe like a garden tour group or something like that?
Well, the internet is magical now. That made it a lot easier than we were all inventing this sort of thing. There's a couple of books about 1,000 gardens to see in the world before you die, or garden tourism. Just that topic will bring up a lot. I have gotten to many states. I have certainly come out there to Minnesota and spoken in a couple of the botanical gardens, and just everywhere is different. Each place has its own magic. Whether you go to California, I have not been to the Seattle flower show, which I hear is astounding. So I think a good place to start probably is to go to some of these seasonal flower and landscape shows. There's some of them over the country, and I would also look up, if I went to any other city, I'd look up botanical gardens near you. And there's no state that doesn't have some wonderful ones.
Well, Sally, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered to Holly and myself and all of our listeners. Can you tell us how we can find your book, find out more information about you?
Sure. Both books, the companion gardening book, is still at Barnes & Noble and places like that. It is available through Amazon. It's published by Penguin now. And that's my first baby, and it sold 75,000 copies over a long time. But it's wonderful to see it still being picked up kind of by a new generation of younger gardeners starting out with their organic lives. But my other book is Buffalo Style Gardens, and it tells how we created a garden tourism mecca here. So that one is out there too, Buffalo Style Gardens. And if people find it, we have a website, and I'd be happy to send them a signed one, buffalostylegardens.com. So thank you for your interest, and I'm thrilled to have had your phone call.
Well, we thank you for your time and your information that you've not only taught Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. We thank you for that.
Oh, good. Thank you for calling.
And when we come back, it's going to be your garden questions, our garden answers. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Soil Diva Liquid Microbe Stimulant Spray improves the health of your plants you work hard to grow, stimulates the natural enzymes, and increases beneficial soil bacteria. Go to soildiva.net. Soildiva.net. Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardeners, farms, landscaping, and more. To find our products nearest you, visit blueribbonorganics.com. Rootmaker starts your plants off right and keeps them going through harvest. From their seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots to their large variety of grow bags, 1 to 60 gallons, their products will provide you the harvest you've never seen before. Visit rootmaker.com. Use coupon code ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. That coupon code is ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. Straw bale gardening is all the rage. Get your bale started easily with the Bale Buster Straw Bale Conditioning Formula. This is the only product that has been specifically formulated for use in straw bale gardening. Each unit contains 250 million colony-forming units of trichoderma, fungi, and Bacillus bacteria, in addition to the fertilizer itself, produces fantastic results with a bountiful production of vegetable crops. Start with the best to get the best, traditional or organic formula. Take the guesswork out of conditioning your straw bale. Go to balebuster.com to find out more. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Wrapping up the show, but we got time for your garden questions, our garden answers. You got a question, send it on over to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call toll-free coast to coast. That number is 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. If we can't get to you and get you on the air, leave a message and we will call you back with the answer to your question. We had a number of questions come in this week. Let's kick it off now, Holly, with the first one, which is, how much space is best between raised beds or in-ground designated garden beds?
Well, typically we say 2 feet, but you realistically want to be able to get your lawnmower between them.
And a wheelbarrow or a cart.
Yeah, anything like that. So if you have, you know, a wider lawnmower or maybe even just a riding lawnmower and you want to just like zip through there, you might need to make it a little bit wider. Otherwise, 2 feet is kind of what's recommended.
The minimum. I would go 3. If you can do 4, it's even better. And not only just for the yard cart or the cart or the lawnmower or the wheelbarrow, just that you don't feel crowded walking between your, if there are raised beds, you got boards, you know, you can do that. But just if you have the space, eliminate one bed in order to get enough space between the rest of the beds.
So Sierra wrote in and said, I'm a fairly green gardener to start some herbs from seed. Many of the sites I have looked gave me very little hope or success with my rosemary seeds. They all say that it's so difficult, it's so hard to start them. But then I found your video in 2023 saying that it is possible and maybe not so terribly difficult to grow rosemary from seed. However, my question relates to the paper towel on top of the soil method is, will the light from the grow lights get through the paper towel to the seeds, or they do not need the light for germination? Thank you so much, and thank you for the information.
Okay. She's referring to a technique that I discovered or I created myself. Hey, I'm famous, maybe. When we start seeds indoors, the atmosphere in our home typically in the winter is fairly dry. So when you're watering your seedlings, they dry out and they're not germinated yet. You've just planted them. They typically dry out pretty quick because the moisture is being absorbed into the air. So what I discovered was using paper towels as a mulch for your indoor plants. You plant a party cup of seeds or a tray of seeds, and you lay a layer or one layer of paper towel down on top of it, water it, allow the water to percolate through the paper towel, and that creates a crust. The paper towel dries out, creates a little crust, and that holds a tremendous amount of moisture in, allowing a better germination rate on your seedlings. And once the seedlings, if it's a fill-in-the-blank plant that takes 7 to 14 days to germinate, between that 7 and 14 days, you want to continue to monitor that, lifting the paper towel up, seeing if anything's going to germinate. When you see that, then you want to remove that paper towel. That is creating a barrier and holding moisture in and getting a better germination, and you have to water a lot less. So with rosemary, it can take up to 28 days. If you're not a patient person, just buy the rosemary at the garden center. It's not going to...
It does take some time, and it does... It, like Joy said, if you're not patient, it can get frustrating.
And you're going to think that they're never going to come up. So they do require some light in order to germinate. However, they still need a little bit of soil on top of the seed. So by doing a little bit of soil on top of the seed and then covering them with a paper towel, that paper towel will illuminate some light through the tissues of it. If you're underneath a grow light or next to a south-facing window that allows a lot of light in. And you want to monitor the moisture, and that's what that paper towel is doing. And 14, 21, 28 days, you will get sprouts. Again, rosemary is fidgety, but it will work. So if you're thinking you only need two rosemary plants, plant 8 seeds or 10 seeds. Plant way more than you think you need so you have that opportunity to give away or plant more rosemary. Who can't use more rosemary in order to plant? To do that way.
Rosemary is tasty. So our next question here is, new gardener here wanting to maximize my resources. I have a cat and a dog. Is it safe to compost their waste and use it in the garden?
Well, here's the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, says that dog and cat waste composted can be used alternatively in soil such as lawn or non-edible landscaping. You don't want to use it in your garden because cats and dogs may carry pathogens and be harmful to humans. They're to humans. Composting it still needs to get to 135 to 170 degrees for multiple days consecutive for 7 days in order to kill those pathogens. And not all compost bins are created equal, and not all composting people are created equal. So getting that correct temperature for that duration may not be safe to do. But if you do feel that you want to compost your pet's waste, you can do that separately. And when that turns into soil, you can top dress it around your flowers, your rose bushes, cast it on your lawn, but do not put it in your containers or your edible or your landscaping or your garden where you have edible plants at. Now, if you want to go down the very deep and curvy rabbit hole of composting, there are certain people who compost their own waste and utilize it in their garden. Now, you think that's kind of gross, but it's no different than a cow. We see a cow, we feed a cow grain and grasses, kicks it out the back end, we let it wait for a while, assuming that it's not been sprayed with a persistent herbicide that will kill your broadleaf plants. and it turns into soil. We put it in the garden. We don't think anything of it. Chicken manure, goat manure, fill in the blank manure, properly time aged. But with the people waste compost, we consume so much toxins that the overall consensus of it is it's not safe for us to use our own waste in our garden because of the prescriptions, because of just the food that we eat, the processed food. It's not going to be a healthy thing for our soil.
Absolutely.
But that's why they have composting toilets.
Right.
And that's a thing, and it's what it is. So there you go.
So another person asks, what are some tips and tricks for growing corn? So corn, it likes a lot, likes more warmth. So you want a 55 degree Fahrenheit minimum soil temperature. You want to make sure you look at the long range forecast. You can actually take a meat thermometer and put it into your soil.
Not to get the long range forecast, to get the soil.
Soil temperature.
Maybe that's the secret to the meteorologists. You know, we just
They're
hold the
there.
Meat thermometer,
yeah.
And that's
in the air.
Yeah, in the air. Yeah.
And then you can grow it in a block, or you need to grow it in a block, a 4x4 or an 8x8, something like that. And then you do plant those seeds about 8 to 10 inches apart. And they are a heavy feeder of nitrogen, so you could get a soil test. If you are not having luck maybe the past couple of years, you might be lacking nitrogen in your soil. I remember when Joey and I grew corn, we would just like up the nitrogen in that area like mad.
We took several different packages of fertilizer, and we concocted our own formula. I think it was like 27, 24, 31.
It was nuts.
In order to get the nitrogen. Now, would we, and we didn't do a soil test back then. You can go to soilsavvy.com and get a soil test, and they'll give you 16 points of analyzation in order to know what you're doing, what you need to do or what you need to stop doing in order to get your soil and your pH level all in check so everything's happy. And because we added so much nitrogen to that soil, which we only did this, and you can find it on our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, in the search bar put growing corn, just so we could do it. And we were able to do it, but it was a lot of work, a lot of energy input for one ear of corn. In the peak summer, at any roadside stand or any big box grocery store, you're going to find ears of corn.
And farmers markets
for about a quarter an ear. Now, I don't know anybody, and I've never been able to figure out how I can grow it for a quarter an ear. Now, true enough, it may not be heirloom and non-GMO and all this other stuff, but I can't grow it for a quarter an ear, but I can put a tomato plant in that same area and get 20 pounds of tomatoes off one plant, where I could grow three or four ears of corn. I think the return on the tomatoes is much more, or a zucchini plant. But that being said, if you want to grow it and you are able to grow it in large quantities, that's where you're going to save money. You know, if you just have a little 4x8 or 4x4 patch and you have 16 or 32 plants, it's not going to, you know, it's fun to do, but that's not really much. If you have a quarter acre field and you're planting 1,000 ears, you got something there.
It is fun for like the artisan corn, you know.
It's Native American corn now. Is that the crop proper terminology?
No, I'm talking about like the pretty like glass corn.
Oh, the glass gem corn.
Yeah, glass gem corn. Corn or the pretty like popping corn, whatever it
popcorn,
may be.
Popcorn, yeah. You can grow popcorn. Yeah, that's a thing. You can actually grow popcorn, a homegrown popcorn. But you can do the decorative corn. You can make mesa out of the corn. You can, the blue corn. You can grind it up.
Yeah. So there's reasons why you could grow corn, not just like for mass consumption, I guess. You could do, like I said, the artisan stuff or the specific kind. So we had another question come in. And the question was, as I kind of got excited and I bought myself one of those home composters, but I live in the city and I don't grow any vegetables or anything like that, and I've already fed my houseplants. Do you think that, you know, if I contact a community garden, do you think they would want this homegrown, home whatever compost, knowing that it's just mostly like kitchen scraps and like random shredded paper?
Well, that's what most compost is, kitchen scraps and paper. So, yes. Contact your local garden center, community garden club, explain who you are. Don't just, you know, hey, do you want some free compost? Tell the story. So the story, you know, that here's who I am, here's what I've got, here's what I'm offering. And that's what you should do anytime you call somebody, email somebody, or text somebody that they don't know you. So you're not like some weirdo going, hey, you want some free? Well, what? Why are you toxifying? Because they're.
No, I know. I know. It's.
I'll put poison in it, and then you put it in your garden, and all plants die, and I laugh. People will do that kind of mess.
That's why I think it's a good question.
Yeah,
for sure. So, yeah, just make sure you do find the garden group, garden community garden. Reach out and just let them know, you know, what happened, and I'm sure they'll be happy to take it.
Well, Holly, it's that time of the show. What did we learn today? What did you learn today?
Today I learned from our guest, Sally, that the city of Buffalo has the most... Is it community gardens? Was it community gardens?
Yeah.
Public gardens in the United States, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool.
I learned, and I learn this every time whenever we talk about this no seed starting thing. It just fascinates me that Holly never knew what seed starts were growing up. You never knew that. I mean, you never went to the garden center. None of that. So I always learn and relearn that there are people who are not familiar with the techniques that we practice on a yearly basis, that you practice on a yearly basis. So we have to educate respectfully everybody who wants to be a gardener.
After all these years, that still blows your mind?
Yes.
That's cute.
What we learned today is brought to you by honeybeehealthy.com.
Whether you're a gardener, a bee hobbyist, or a professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy has the products to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, just the letter B, healthy.com.
Tune in next week to the program where we will discuss 5 don'ts of gardening, as well as does warm winters mean more bugs in the summer? Our guest is author of the very popular technique of gardening, the straw bale garden method. Joe Karsten will be with us. And until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joey Baird, and we will see you in the garden.